Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this episode, we talk about the evolution of Computex from its sales roots to the marketing powerhouse it is today. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McGee. It has been a very, very busy travel summer for me. This has been kind of crazy.
And it has affected our timeline a little bit.
Yep. If you have been following what we do here at the Hardware Asylum Podcast, you know, we have a main show that comes out, what, the 10th of every month?
About, yeah.
And then we follow up with an extra on the 24th. And that was actually a suggestion when we had the Ninja Lane podcast back in the day, you know, because it's like, well, what happens every other week? You
know, our marketing guy suggested it.
Yeah. He said, well, you should do another show because I listen to this on my way to work. And since our shows are a half hour, it seems like that's the normal Californian commute or something like that. But it worked out. So we do an extra. Well, in June, we didn't do one because I was going to be on a plane when that show needed to go live.
Travel season.
And I was headed to Computex and then to another place.
Well, we'll talk about that at a later date, but let's talk about Computex.
Yeah, Computex. It is the one trade show that I think has 100% relevancy with anything that would have to do with Hardware Asylum and other hardware review websites.
And that's a bold statement. So maybe we assume our folks are familiar, but what is Computex for those that are unaware?
Well, Computex is it's an evolving show is really what it is. So back in when I first started to go back in 2003, oh my God, a long time. The Computex was a show really established to promote what Taiwan could do. The exhibits that they had on display were from Taiwanese manufacturers and others that got invited, and it was sales focused. So pretty much everybody in the booth was a salesman. There might be a marketing person there. You kind of had to ask for them.
Okay.
But the displays were as such, this is all we have.
So this is not CES back in the day with the booth babes and all the fanfare.
Kind of. Well, so CES with the booth babes was, you know, the whole reason you have booth babes, even at like a gaming show or even at a car show, is to draw attention to your product or to you, right?
Well, and that makes sure you get in the press, which is important.
Exactly. Well, in these early days of Computex, there were booth babes everywhere. The Taiwanese models were in high demand. And they would be, you know, eye candy for the booth to attract people. But most of them were handing out flyers. So someone would have like a sign and they just walk the show floor and hand out flyers to people. And those flyers would be things like such and such a motherboard from so-and-so company. Here's our video card selection. Here's our heatsink selection.
Some stuff more like catalog style.
Yeah. And the idea was advertising. So you would have a cute girl walking around giving you a flyer. Let's find out where this booth is. Go stop by and, you know, have a chat. The displays were in such a way that, you know, you would have 20 video cards all on one shelf, which is pretty awesome. So the video card and then a little sign. If you had questions about it, you could ask the salesperson and they could pull up the individual specs. Some manufacturers actually had the specs next to them and stuff like that. So it made it real easy for me to go by and just snap a picture. And that would be my coverage. And since I used Computex as a way to drum up business, so to speak, make contacts, I can take a couple of pictures, ask some questions, say, hey, I would like to review this, or I can do an article for you or something, and then make that contact. And then afterwards, it's been the next 3 months trying to get a hold of that person and say, hey, can you send me this product? And, you know, a lot of times it would pan out. Sometimes it never did.
A relationship building, right? I get that.
Well, and in those early days, I didn't really know how to treat trade shows. So like even I went to Comdex. You remember Comdex?
Oh, that's like way back. Wasn't that like all electronics?
Yeah, it was electronics. And then they also had
audio like, and cars and all the things, right?
Well, and they also had like learning events. So you could sign up for classes and get training on stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they had everything at Comdex. But that was the summer trade show that happened in Vegas. And I think I went to the very last one before I think 9/11 hit.
Oh no.
Basically like shut down like international travel into the United States. But Comdex was kind of on the, it was on the downhill. So when I went to Comdex, I wasn't really sure how to handle it. So I did what I thought was right, and I was reporting on it. So I'd find some people to talk to and then write up a little thing about their booth and take a bunch of pictures about trying to meet Intel or finding ATI in the corner and not being able to get in to talk to them. You know, so it was me partially complaining that I didn't plan ahead, and then partially saying, hey, this is actually a pretty cool place. A lot of stuff to see. And then CES was the same way. So it made it easy for me to go and take pictures of this big wall of video cards or motherboards and be able to write about, this is what's coming out and this is the new thing they're working on. Hey, look at this one. It's got a gold PCB, stuff like that. And so Computex was relevant in that these Taiwanese manufacturers were making the products that we cared about. So as a PC hardware enthusiast, they were making the motherboards. That was where MSI's headquarters is. Right. That's where ASUS's headquarters is. Gigabyte is there. So when I first started going, Computex was in what they call the World Trade Center. And, you know, here in the U.S., we think of the Twin Towers in New York. But in this case, it was really just a multi-floor building that had a bunch of shops that handled international sales. But in the middle was a show floor, which was kind of cool. So they set up these little tiny booths, and that's where they would show off their wares. And as you can imagine, any booth had sort of a draw.
A little buzz going on.
Yeah. Well, like XFX, for instance. This is a company from Hong Kong, if I remember correctly. They had one year there was a truck, and that was their booth. Was this XFX truck, right? So you could walk into the truck, and then they had a little seating area where you could sit down and actually talk to your marketing people and stuff. But outside was a roped off area where they had a roulette wheel.
Oh, cool.
And you can go and spin the roulette wheel and win a prize. And the prize might be like a keychain or a shirt or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's like it landed on red, you would get this. Ran on black, you get this. Ran on something else, you get something else. Because of that, there was people standing and gawking the entire time. And so that entire hall was basically nobody could move. You couldn't get in and couldn't get out. And so those sorts of draws or little exhibits or little shows would halt traffic. And since there wasn't a lot of room between the booths, it would prevent you from getting from one point to the other. And so it was myself and one of my other editors was with me, and I was making a beeline through the crowd, and then I'd look back and say, where's my person? And they would get stuck behind because they didn't see the same gap that I saw.
You are a big, scary American, so that probably helps.
Yeah, that is true. I could see over everybody, which was kind of fun. Computex back then was really small. It hadn't actually quite exploded. It wasn't a CES where it was this big marketing flare. And that was partially due because it was designed to be sales, and it was also in a very small location. So like I talked about the World Trade Center, and that's...
Sounds big.
It sounds big. And the show floor is relatively big. It took up two levels, but that wasn't Computex at all, or as a whole, I should say. There were three other outbuildings that you could get on a little bus, and it would take you to building or hall one, hall three. For instance, I think DFI was in hall three. And then Gigabyte was offsite somewhere. And I have a picture of this where there was a Gigabyte limo. So nice. If you had a meeting with Gigabyte, they would pick you up outside of one of the halls and then take you to wherever they had their meeting. I'm like, I'm not sure exactly where that was. And Gigabyte was always like this, I don't know, kind of like a narcissistic company. It's like, we are more important than you, and this is how we're going to show it. Yeah, DFI was in one building, and then they had other motherboard manufacturers in that same location. I could spend almost an entire day in Hall 3 meeting with people and taking pictures of stuff, and it was actually really fun. You go into Hall 2, and it might be all, I think what was it? Hall 2 was half of it was students with their college projects.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
One of them that stands out was a electronic cat feeder.
Wow.
So the cat would stand on a scale, and using facial recognition would be able to determine what cat it is and correlate that with the weight and then distribute the right amount of food.
Huh.
And they would sit, and that's making the assumption that the cat's going to sit there and eat all that food and then not come back.
Well, yeah, but that's a little before its time, right? Because they're doing active monitoring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that was the other thing, is that you hook it up to your Wi-Fi in your house, and then you could watch your cat and talk to him over your phone.
There you go.
And so you could have this interactive experience with your animal and treat it as a cat can come by and get a little treat, and you can talk to him and see how it's going. It was really more geared toward the Asian culture, because around here we work for 8-10 hours a day.
Yeah, well, that's pretty normal here.
Over there, they might be working 12-14 hours. And so if you want
to check in on your pet remotely.
Yeah, here's my break. I'm going to check in my pet and see how he's doing. And so that was actually a college project that was on a display at Computex in that little college area, which was kind of fun. So, well, fast forward, I think it's like 5 or 6 years from there, they built the Nangong facility. And this is about a half an hour away from where the World Trade Center is. But this building was huge, and it was designed for exhibits and stuff like that. And now the booths all of a sudden got big.
Well, they had space.
They had a lot of space. They started building really large booths, like what you would see in the central hall in CES. It, not so much the where Sony, where you have the Sony Village, and it would be like everything that Sony sells. But it would be large, multi-aerial booths. And for instance, Asus had two locations, kitty corner to each other.
Oh, wow.
And on the ground floor would be all of the memory manufacturers. So you'd have G-Skill and Patriot was there, ADATA was there, and they all had corners in the center, and they were all rather large. And they would all have competing shows going on.
And it made it sense.
The booths transitioned from being sales-focused to be more marketing and, you know, explaining why we are more important than everybody else and really just trying to garner more attention. And so the booth babes ramped up. So instead of having just one, you would have 10. And they would actually be working the booth with the people that are supposed to be working the booth. So they draw the people in, take a bunch of pictures, and then you'd say, I need to speak with marketing, and they will go and point them out. And you go over there and talk to them and then come back and get selfie pictures with the models, because they were there to not necessarily promote the company, but also to promote themselves.
Now, was this when they would sometimes stop and do their little song and dance shows and things, like a Vegas show?
Yes, yes. And that became a spectacle. So you'd be walking down the hall, they'd be doing their little song and dance, and you would have photographers like roping off the area. So
you'd
have the lackeys there with holding the lights, preventing people from walking in front, and then it's just photographer, blah, 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 all the way across. So if I wanted to get a picture of that, I had to hold my camera up over everybody to take a picture and then hope that I got it in frame.
That's a good day to be a tall American. Wow.
Yeah. And I was talking to some of my marketing people around this time, and they said, yeah, these are the what we call the creepy guys.
Oh, yeah.
Because they, some of them are part of the marketing agency, and they're just taking pictures of the girls for their magazine or whatever they were doing. But others were just freelance photographers taking pictures of the girls, either for themselves or to try and sell the pictures to make money. Kind of like the paparazzi.
Oh, gosh, that's scary.
Yeah. And eventually, you know, the booth babe culture kind of went away. It did that really worldwide, too, because like at E3, they said no more booth babes. CES kind of got rid of them, and it really came out of favor.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, it's kind of an old school approach to things. Mm-hmm. Not so, I guess, PC.
Yeah, not so much. It took away one of the things that, you know, I'd make a booth babe gallery at the end for Computex, and it was, I thought it was fun. You know, you take, find all the girls to take a picture. Some of my editor friends would, that was their Computex coverage, was all booth babes, and they were really, really proud of being able to go around and take a picture of every one of them at every booth.
Oh, it's and like then, a collection.
And then come back another day and then find out there was no new girls. So they took different pictures of them. And I'm like, that is creepy. I mean, I felt bad about taking a picture of a girl who was playing a video game. It was like toward the end when the show was getting closed up and I was walking by and she was just playing a video game. And I'm like, oh, click. I kind of felt bad about that just because...
Well, it's a different culture.
This year, and the whole reason I bring this up is because Computex has changed. And I want to say it's not as relevant as it used to be.
Okay.
And that's kind of a bold statement because I thought Computex was, that was the show to go to if you're a hardware enthusiast.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like the encyclopedia of hardware, right? Everybody was there with everything.
Yeah. And so when COVID locked down Computex, they opened it back up in 2023. I didn't get to go to that show, but I went to 2024. And that was my first time back. There wasn't a lot of people there.
Well, and people were still a little afraid to travel.
Yeah. And also, PC hardware is changing. This was like the first year when there wasn't anything really new on display. So we were, instead of releasing new motherboard products at Computex, it was all the old stuff that got released in the fall from the previous year. It made it less relevant because, like, well, I've seen all this stuff before, but I still used it as a network opportunity to get reacquainted with my people that I talked to there. And you would be surprised at what 4 years of not attending a trade show can do to your
change your whole perspective.
I would go around to like the MSI booth and I'm like, I don't recognize any of these people because everybody had changed. You know, some people had taken the opportunity as like they retired, move on, something else. Some of them didn't want to go because they, you know, they were sales and marketing before and now maybe they're a director or something like that. Right. So, but turns out that being a tall American, people recognize me. So I'd walk around and I'm like taking pictures of stuff. And then one of my friends from MSI walk over and, hey, Dennis, how's it going? And say, oh, my God, I was looking for you. Couldn't find you. So while 2024 was a bit of a letdown, 2025 was a little bit more exciting. Not so much in the PC hardware space, but because the way that the show had changed. So I show up early and try to get to some of my meetings at like 9:30, which is when the show opens. And I go upstairs, try to get through, and there's a line. And I'm like, why is there a line? And I just kind of pop into line. I'm like, it's going pretty quick. So I'm like, all right, cool, whatever. I get up and they had a full like airport style security check.
That's new.
And yeah, they never done that before. It's like, just show your badge in, they count you and then away you go. Well, at this point, go through a metal detector. I had to have my bag inspected to go through an X-ray machine. And then I had a pat down because I failed the metal detector.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, wow, this is a little strange. And I thought, well, maybe this is the new thing because it was like one of my first times at Nangong in 2025, right? Well, it turns out later on that the Taiwanese president wanted to walk the show floor.
Well, that's exciting.
And so she was there, plus her entourage and the media was there. And because she was there, they increased security.
Well, yeah, I would think so.
They couldn't block anybody else from attending. And she went during the, you know, the open hours, which I think is responsible. You know, that's the way that.
No special favors, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's also when the workers are going to be there. It's just, you don't want to show up 2 hours early just to go and.
Yeah, see empty booths.
Yeah, see empty booths and stuff. So while she was there, enhanced security. But then I later found out that an hour or so after she had left, Jensen from NVIDIA did the same thing.
Okay.
And so he had his entourage of bodyguards walking around the booth. Everybody else had heard that he was going to be there. So that upper floor was just completely packed.
What a circus.
Yeah, it was almost like you couldn't walk around. And it was all because somebody said, Jensen's going to be here. And they thought, well, maybe if I show up, I'll get a glimpse of him.
Oh, wow.
But it's like he showed up like an hour after the president did. And that was at like an hour after it opened.
Well, I feel like as an American, tall American, as we've been saying, I think that maybe cold of personality around Jensen's a little bit harder to understand than it would be if we were over in Taiwan, for example.
Well, yeah. And I would equate it to going to Hollywood and running into Keanu Reeves or something like that.
Okay.
So some people are very starstruck. It's like we find a celebrity and, oh my God, we just try to bust in and get a signature and stuff like that. And it's like, I guess I don't get starstruck in that same way because it's like, I really don't care.
They never return my calls either, Dennis. It's
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty sad. But in the Taiwanese culture, Jensen is a really big deal for several reasons. One, because he's Taiwanese. And two, everything that NVIDIA produces is made in Taiwan at TSMC, at the fab there. All of our RTX and GTX cards are made there, or the chips are made there. All of the AI machines are made there. And so that is a lot of money coming through Taiwan, just in general.
Oh, yeah. Well, and NVIDIA has been a stock darling. There's a lot of money there.
Yeah.
So I get it.
There, and it's a huge draw. Well, anytime you can attach that name to anything, it's going to garner attention. And so the Taiwanese government has really monopolized on that, and they're using Computex as their national show to monopolize on everything that Taiwan's doing. And so while in 2026, if we fast forward, you know, Jensen did his, what I call his baby kissing tour. And I'm equating that to, like, you know, trying to get elected as president, right?
Well, yeah, but it's almost more rock star, right? Because, you know, he's signing people's shirts and their video cards and...
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, I'll have to talk about that, too. So, like, in 2026, though, Jensen was doing his thing. The president, I don't think, showed up this time. But the government was very involved, and they were treating the Jensen visit as, like, the Pope coming to town.
Oh, no. Wow. This is what we've become.
Yeah. So he would do his little kissing tour, and the Computex organizers had started doing red velvet ropes along the show path where he wanted to go. So he would say what vendors he wanted to talk to, because he was stopping by, like, MSI to go and shine the NVIDIA products that are there. And then that would become a media spectacle for that particular company.
So let me make sure I understand here. So we're not talking like restricted entrance, like a velvet rope at a club or something. We're talking about literally just blocking a path off.
Yes.
Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah. So it's like, think of it as, you know, we have a 10-foot wide corridor, and the middle 6 feet are roped off.
Well, that seems a big deal.
And that's where Jensen and his bodyguards are walking. And then there's media there. There's a camera guy that goes forward, camera guy in the back. I mentioned his bodyguards, right? He had six of them.
Six?
Yeah.
They're probably big Americans too. Yeah.
Well, they are. And they have the little ear cup thing, and I'm not sure if they're armed or anything. But really, it was more to protect him from people just trying to jump the ropes. And the thing is, it's like the Taiwanese people are actually really, really, really respectable. So there wouldn't have been an incident, especially at something big like Computex, which is an invite only to begin with. But the part that was annoying was that they would rope off this path. And for me, I was on like one side of the ropes, and I needed to get to a vendor on the other side for my meeting. You know, I'm walking along and say, I should be able to walk from here over to here. And
nope,
I cannot. So now I had to go four booths this way, back down this way. And since everybody else had to do the same thing, it was like elbow to elbow. And I have some pictures of this on the website where there's a lot of people there. You know, I wasn't taking pictures as I was trying to walk through, you know, these huge crowds, but I'd like stop and say, yeah, this is a big sea of people. But then walk around and then show up like 5 minutes late because it literally took me that long to get all the way over there. And then I look over at the ropes. Jensen's not here.
No.
They roped it off like an hour and a half beforehand. And he would be there for an hour, maybe an hour and a half after that. And then when he was gone, they didn't take the ropes down.
Well, I guess logistically it takes a while to set it up and take it down.
Yeah.
But how inconvenient is that?
Yeah, it's like they don't even go through and unhook the red ropes after he's done. So, you know, it's just this path that is blocking access and flow along the show floor, and also making the vendors along that path inaccessible by anybody that wants to stop in and say hi. So there was a lot of small vendors that were along that rope path. There was enough room for like maybe two people to stand front to back, and then a third person could squeeze by.
Maybe.
Without having to go through the booth. And, you know, for me, I'm like trying to walk along and I'm like, squeeze, squeeze, squeeze. And then you get to like one of the poles at the end of the booth and I can't get past. And I'm like, oh my God, really? And then I look at the guys sitting in the booth and they're just like staring off in the space. It's like, you know, because at that point.
Your whole presentation's on pause.
Yeah, it's worthless for them.
Well, I mean, they're evolving. They've got a path this year. They didn't the first year.
Yeah.
So maybe next year they'll figure out how to make a bubble, I guess, that moves with them.
Yeah, a bubble. Nice. No, I don't think that would actually work. It'll probably be the ropes again. And some of that equates to how Computex has changed. You know, I mentioned before it was sales focused. So having access to all these booths was really super important to everybody who had paid money to set up a booth. And once it turned into more of marketing focus and less sales focus, the ROI is just being there. So there's less of a, you know, we have to make this many sales at Computex, otherwise we don't pay for our booth sort of thing. We're just paying for this out of marketing budget.
Right.
And having Jensen come by with all the extra media exposure and him coming by and signing limited edition graphics cards, that's a huge spectacle. It's really important for the show. It's really important for the vendor that he's seen.
Oh yeah, because you're going to get all kinds of free marketing out of that.
Yeah, and it's not hurting these other vendors because they're already spending money to be there. You know, it is hurting them in that they don't get to talk to everybody that is attending the show. But the way that Computex in Taiwan sees it, per my understanding, is that it doesn't matter. Because we're making noise. You know, any marketing is good marketing, right?
You hope so anyway.
And so 2027, if I happen to go, I have a feeling that it's going to be exactly the same, if not worse. And if none of my vendors that I'm seeing have anything new to show, then it makes it less relevant for me to be there. Because then I'm just part of the circus and not really making any new contacts. I'm not taking a picture of the latest super secret motherboard that's being released with a brand new socket or something like that. It just becomes a really expensive business trip.
Well, I know we've talked a lot about the evolution of the show, but we haven't talked a lot about what you saw.
Oh, right.
So I think maybe we should wind up with a couple of highlights from the show at least and let you talk to us about what you liked.
Well, there was a lot of interesting things to see at Computex, even though there wasn't really anything new per se. A lot of the highlights are done as articles. You can find those on hardwaresound.com or in the show notes down below. One manufacturer that I did not write an article about specifically was ASUS, because they were celebrating their 20th anniversary of ROG.
Wow, 20th anniversary. That's a long time.
They were doing that instead of showing off new products.
Jerks.
Yeah, it's crazy. But they had the Anniversary Edition Crosshair 2006.
Well, that's kind of a new product.
It's kind of a new product. They created, Crosshair is the supreme overclocking motherboard if you are overclocking on AMD. And this motherboard was one that set overclocking records on liquid helium.
Ooh.
Which is actually very, very cool to see. There's a couple of videos on YouTube. You can go check them out if you'd like. But they created a in flavor of version with an AM5 processor to make it look like the 2006 edition, complete with different colored expansion slots.
Now, hold on, Dennis. Now, isn't Crosshair like a throwback to AMD's original performance line that was the competitor to SLI?
Close. I think that was Crossfire.
Oh, Crossfire.
Yeah.
That's right. I was thinking we had another evolution on our hands. Yeah. But we kind of do, right? Because the Crosshair motherboards have been around for a while.
Right. Well, this is the 2006 edition, which was kind of when that board came out. I have one. I can pull it down from the shelf if we really want to go back into history. But the Crosshair was basically just the performance AMD edition. So we have like the Apex, which was always the highest performing Intel motherboard.
Right.
This is how ROG separated things. They gave it a name. So you would have like a video card that would have a matrix name. And so all of these names associated themselves with a certain chipset. And Crosshair was specific for AMD.
Well, talk to me a little bit about this build here, and we'll have to put this picture also in the show notes.
Oh yeah, so the build that they had, it was, they call it the Legend Reborn, and this was a retro-inspired case mod. So you see a lot of beige in here, but we have the new Crosshair motherboard with an AIO water cooler going into a full distro loop, which was kind of cool. And down in the bottom in the lower left, there's a 3.5-inch floppy disk.
Oh, that is retro.
Yeah. And we have a flat panel screen here that basically they replaced the bezel with kind of this beige looking thing to make it look like an old LCD, which is pretty cool.
And I kind of like it though.
Yeah, overall, I really like this mod a lot. It speaks well to the retro anniversary feel of the Crosshair motherboard and how they, you know, they brought it back in a slightly different form. This next picture I'll put with the mod, and this is actually the Crosshair motherboard with all the stuff on it. And we have pogo pins over here for different lighting effects. We have covers over our multiple M.2 drive slots. The layout is modern. You know, we only have two expansion slots in here, whereas the original Crosshair had all expansion slots because that's the way it was back in the day. But we have blue slots here. So blue on the PCI Express. We have blue and white on the memory. We have white slots for the 8-pin CPUs. We have blue ones down here for the USBs. It is a retro throwback because that's the way it was back in 2006. Everything was multicolored.
I like that they went also with the beautiful bold copper. It's just nice to see someone bucking the trend of everything looking the same or being all screens, which seems to be where we're headed.
Yeah, well, and this is an amazing board for that. I think it's super, super limited edition because Asus tends to do that kind of thing. But
another unicorn. That's a shame too, because it is beautiful.
Okay, so the next vendor, oh my God, Noctua.
Yeah, well, Noctua's kind of been, I don't know, everywhere in the news lately. It seems like they're really on a tear with some great products.
Well, and it's because they're getting integrated with, you know, OEM stuff. So we had Noctua-enabled coolers. So it was the Noctua edition. We have Seasonic. They have a power supply that is a Noctua edition. It actually has the Noctua fan in there, special fan curves, special color, special cables. I did a review of an Antec case that is a Noctua edition. So now it can be a completely air-cooled Noctua-enabled, add your Noctua power supply, add your Noctua
video cards and
video card. Everything. And now you can add your own Noctua AIO.
Oh, so you could do a complete Noctua-themed case, which, I don't know, that's kind of appealing. It'd be quiet.
It's super, super quiet. And they went all out on the NL-LC1 AIO. That's a weird product name. But basically, this is an Asetek-enabled AIO. So they're using the classic Asetek design. Nothing, no special pumps or anything like that. But then they added this hump to the top. And that is a rubber-mounted sound shield, to call it. But basically, on the top, there is a baffle. And here's, I'll scroll down a little bit. There's this baffle here. It will basically shield the pump noise. So it lowers it by like 5 dB or something like that. It's an insane amount. And you and I both know AIOs do not make a lot of noise at all. And being able to say that we can knock down the discomforting sounds by adding this and then rubber mounting some stuff is kind of a big deal.
Wow. We might have to look into doing an all Noctua build and see how quiet it really is.
Well, I do have the case for it and I know how to get the other stuff. So maybe we can do that. This cooler also has the ability to add a little fan to the top. So you basically pull the top off of the hump, right? And there's some power pins in there. Put the fan on top of there, and that will allow you to cool the VRM around your CPU, which will then further reduce the noise profile because there isn't a lot of heat anymore.
Oh, wow. I think that's the first time I've seen anybody put a fan on a pump array, especially on an AIO.
Well, Silverstone has them. But they did not take the silent approach. They took the we are going to add a bunch of cooling approach.
Different train of thought.
Yeah. The next item that they have is a prototype. And I'm going to get this wrong. They call it the thermal siphon. And basically, this is a pumpless AIO. And it works a lot like the way that a single stage phase cooler works.
Okay.
But without the compressor. So what it has a circulating liquid. When it makes contact with the CPU, it will vaporize. And anytime a fluid changes phase, it removes a lot of heat.
Yeah.
As part of that, right? So what it's doing is it's taking all this heat in a gaseous form, moving it into the radiator. They have some Noctua fans, cool that fluid in the radiator, and then it flows back down the liquid back to the pump.
Oh, wow.
And so this design is very, very sensitive to orientation. So you can only have the radiator in the upper position.
Okay. Well, that makes sense because the vapor is going to rise.
But the idea here is that they can make a completely silent AIO. So they remove, except for the fan noise for the radiator, they remove every moving part. This cooler would basically last forever. If they can bring it to market and make it affordable, it will be one of the probably the best coolers out there.
That is really an awesome idea. No pump at all.
Nope.
Trust Noctua to find a way to make it even quieter.
Of course. The final vendor that we'll talk about, and then you'll have to check out the articles on hardwaresound.com, is Silverstone.
Now, we do love Silverstone.
So Silverstone had a new version of the FPL02, which was that retro case that we reviewed a little while ago. Now they have the Micro ATX edition that they call the FPL03. And it has the same styling. It's just smaller. The difference here, though, is that the dashboard, which we like so much from our retro PC days, where it has the digital display and the power and turbo buttons and stuff.
Yeah.
Those are not tied to computer functions like they are on the older case. Those will be tied to individual functions. So you can set one of them to maybe control your LED lights.
Oh, so they're not specifically done for one thing.
Right. This particular case has the power and reset buttons from the factory design in the top. So though it completely intact. So you get all the USBs up there. You have your power and reset up there. But they're integrated into the chassis so nicely that you don't really see them unless you really want to see them. So I really like this design. You know, it's a perfect successor. Has the same retro design, same retro color, same support. And then, of course, some of the other items they had were all based off of AI workstations. So they'll support multiple graphics cards, multiple power supplies, multiple drives. Pretty much if you have a whole bunch of money, you can buy one of those cases and build a monster machine.
Well, you're definitely going to get a good case if it comes from Silverstone.
Definitely. I guess that's my Computex debrief.
Check out our coverage in the show notes below and stick around for the next leg of the trip in our next episode.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS or subscribe to us on YouTube. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2026. Thanks for listening.